Rhubarb, Rhubarb, Rhubarb. Welcome to episode 26 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. The podcast has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. My name's Tony Esmond, writer of the Monster Spotters Club and Atomic Hercules. I'm also currently the editor of Horizon Cafe from Emanuela Maleri, which I got the comps from today. Looks absolutely brilliant. Really pleased with it. Today we have a guest, a new guest, but an old buddy. The prolific writer of such comics as City of Lost Souls, Transylvania Nights, and the recent VA07, as well as being a member of the band She Burns Red, who I've been playing this morning. Yes, it's only James McCulloch. Hi, James.
Hey, how are you? Nice to talk to you again.
And you, man. Yeah, always a pleasure. We only ever seem to sort of meet in the bar at conventions and stuff, generally, is where I see, isn't it?
Yeah. No, normal. That is normally where I am at conventions, to be fair. But at conventions, it's a long weekend, you know what I mean? It's like 12 o'clock, you're already drinking. It's not. That's what the best thing about the ones where you're not driving. See, the ones where you're driving, nothing worse, because the day wears on, you just get beaten down by the cosplayers that aren't buying anything at your stall.
Good. We're on side completely. Yes. Good times. Right. Did you want to tell the listeners what you've chosen? So we had a chat and I said, would you like to come on? You said, I'll do this book. Did you want to tell the listeners what you've chosen?
Accident Man.
Good.
The Batman's classic.
Yeah. Accident Man. And we're specifically talking about the toxic issues, are we? Is that the plan?
Yeah. I mean, the toxic issues. I mean, I've read the Dark Horse ones as well, but if you want to specifically talk about toxic ones, everything's good as far as Accident Man's concerned with me. So
I agree totally. I'm good. Absolutely, totally. Yeah. For those that don't know Accident Man, he was a hitman without a moral compass, I'm going to say, purely in it for the money. He's part of a loose organisation of hitmen and hitwomen, all with different sort of quirky skills. His speciality is killing people and making it look like an accident. He is, in a way, kind of a yuppie with a punk attitude. He's a master of the martial arts, weapons, firearms, and we're going to take a bit of a dive into his world here. Before I ask James, some questions. We've got some, here are Accident Man's three rules: never get angry, never get involved, and never get caught. A mantra to live by, I reckon. Good stuff.
Yeah, but he doesn't exactly go by them.
No, he fucks them all up, doesn't he? Yeah.
I think by the end of the second strip and caught toxic, he's already went that's out the window. That's gone. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's nice to see that feature. I know you watched the movie this morning. I watched it recently, but it's nice to see that feature in the movie as well, isn't it? All those sort of things.
Yeah, I was actually shocked by how good. Well, I knew the film would be good because of the people involved with the film, the actors and stuff, and the director. But I didn't realise how close it would be to the actual comic.
Yes.
And I was quite shocked. It seemed like it was a labour of love. It was like somebody that really got the comic and wanted to make the comic into a film. And that's a great thing to see, because it's not very often.
It really is, man. And normally I don't talk about the movies, because normally I couldn't give a fuck, really, to be fair. But this one involved Pat, and we had Pat and Scott on the show on the Awesome Comics pod. And I've got to tell you, Scott stayed for like another half an hour chatting to us about comics afterwards. It was like brilliant. That's what I want from a dude. I mean, it's not the biggest budget movie, but it's got a lot of energy. The fight scenes are fucking brilliant.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean it's I mean, even somebody that doesn't know the comic will enjoy it just from the fight scenes.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh aye. Yeah. So what's in the best possible way.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your I've never asked you this actually. Should we start with your general comics origin? When and why did you start reading comics, James?
So my brother used to get 2000 AD.
Right.
When I was a kid. And I would get the Beano, and I think I got the Beano and the Hoot, and then I think the Dandy came, and then Oink or whatever along as well.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my introduction to comics. Was just I would buy any kid's comic I could get. My brother got 2000 AD.
Right.
And I remember it scared the shit out of me. I can swear, right?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah, please do. Yeah.
So I remember 2000 AD scared me. I remember Slaying the King, you know, the issue with the guys with the noses chopped off.
Yeah, yeah.
And then... And AC Trucking Co. always used to scare me for some reason.
Why is it so weird? Same with me. I used to find it sort of vaguely disturbing because it's just so peculiar, isn't it? You know.
Oh, complete. It was just there was just something that because it scared me, I found it fascinating, and I read it like I would sneak a copy because I wasn't allowed to read it because it was my brother's comic, and he wouldn't let me read anything of his because he's my older brother. You know, and it's that kind of brotherly thing. And yeah, and that's where it started. And then I went on holiday to a caravan park.
Right.
And about 1986, it must have been, and maybe 1980, between 1984 and 1986.
Okay.
And I got a couple of comics, and it was like the Blue Devil, Legion of Superheroes, Blue Beetle, I think it was as well. So it must have been about 86.
Yeah.
And there was like this comic packs where you'd buy them and I'd buy them, and I started, and that's how I got any American comics as well.
Okay. But, yeah.
Through the whole thing, though, I've always been a massive fan. I mean, I'm still a subscriber to 2000 AD now, you know, so
Good.
I've always read the, I mean, especially towards the end of the 80s when I started to become a teenager, and it was, you know, I started to want to read more comics because, you know, the British invasion had started in America as well.
Yeah,
So you had some great
it was a
comics
very
coming
cool time
from
back then,
Vertigo
wasn't
and
it?
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then all these amazing British comics like Your Crisis, like Toxic, you know, all these great British comics were just appearing from as if by magic. So it did seem like a wonderful time to get into comics. There was just so much good stuff coming out.
There really was, and it was genuinely, a lot of it was genuinely edgy, wasn't it?
Oh no, I mean, like, if you look back at Toxic now, it's total punk rock. Like, it's like, it's what 2000 AD was when it first arrived. You know, when it first arrived, it was like, oh my god, I shocked the system. And then I think during the, well, it didn't get stale till the 90s, really, 2000 AD for a while. But Toxic kind of like just came in like a sledgehammer. And you had Martial Law, you had Accident Man, and you had the Bogeyman. You know, and that's just a couple of the stories.
Yeah.
That's, they weren't even in it every week. You know, you're like, oh my god, it was just incredible.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, and is that where you discovered? I suppose you discovered Pat's writing in 2008. Did you? Was any specific strips you remember that struck you?
Bad Company wasn't Pat's script, but that's
right.
The one that stuck with me the most when I was a kid. So that's probably a bad example. But it was probably Slane. It was Slane
yeah, it
that
was.
Got to me the most
okay.
when I was a kid because it scared the shit out of me. And it was actually not the 2000D versions that got me into it. As you know, when QC, Quality Comics,
yeah,
or whatever it was, done
like the American
sized
comics. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was when they started coming out because I was a little bit older from when it first thing, so I hadn't read them properly.
Right, I see.
When I was a
now.
Kid, I was just scared of them. And when they started to come out, I started to read them and the best of 2000 AD as well. So I started to rediscover a lot of them. But still to this day, I mean, I've got all the Slane graphic novels, you know, I think that's still peak Mills for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because as a kid, I was really into fantasy stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was the punk Conan,
sorry,
wasn't it? You know, that's
totally.
Yeah,
you know, I'm still a D&D player to this day. You know, I mean, every Tuesday night on Zoom,
get off.
There's a lot of things happening. I'm on genuinely, I'm still. I mean, I used to run a live action role play game and everything. You know, I used to run about in the woods with a giant latex sword when I was 20. You know, like half naked, running through the woods with a giant latex sword, just beating the crap out of people. You know.
No, so this belays your cool image that I have in my mind of you as like it's, you know, in a band, and you know it's
you know
we can be both.
Everyone's got a geeky side.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a geeky side, you know. And I don't get to talk about it a lot, but no, it's funny because that's how I met Janine that done the artwork for City of Lost Souls. As she was one of the players of the vampire live action role playing game, and that's when I just came back to start getting into it because I kind of went away from stuff for a while and just concentrating on music for like 10 years solid, and. Although I didn't really get very far with music, but we did go far because I mean we toured the country and we got on a couple of magazines and stuff. And we got some radio.
Right.
We never made it big, you know, in the sense of the word. I mean, like even to the extent where a lot of people still don't like people in the classic rock circle, where we're a classic rock band, are like when you're like, yeah, but I was in this band before, and they're like, who? And like, it doesn't matter, you know.
Right. Okay.
But we supported some good bands and we've done some good stuff, and because concentrating on music was a big thing, and. But
the music
that, though,
and comics had something of a crossover back then, didn't they? You know, when you think of like Deadline magazine and stuff like that, it was it was cool.
Neil Gaiman doing the Alice Cooper comic, you know, what was Last Temptation and stuff like that. You know, comics and music have always got this kind of they're very much on. I think it's because the same people that are really into music are often really into comics.
Yeah.
And if you're into metal, you're into comics.
Good point. I think if you were into Hawkwind, you could almost guarantee you would have read a few science fiction novels and a few comics in your time. You know.
Yeah, if you're not, then what are you doing with your
life?
You know what I mean? What are you doing listening to Hawkwind if that's, you know, not what you're doing for your time?
And I think Alan Moore and Grant Morrison both wrote for Sounds. They did strips for Sounds magazine, didn't they? I think there was that sort of So those that don't know it, Toxic Comic, which is where... It's got something of a checkered history, a tiny bit of a checkered history, Action Man. Not checkered, but it jumped about a tiny bit. It started off in Toxic magazine. Toxic ran from the 28th of March to the 24th of October 1991, only 31 issues. And actually, a really short run there. I was surprised when I looked at how short it was. It seems to have...
I remember it being a lot longer when I was younger.
Yeah.
Like, I remember it being there from... probably just because you're a kid and time seems longer, but 31, because it was weekly as well, so it was like 31 weeks, and that's nothing.
It really is.
You know, that's...
Yeah.
It's a blink of an eye, you know, these days, but, like, you know, there's Kickstarter campaigns where you've bought your comic and it still hasn't arrived 31 weeks after you've bloody had the money.
31
you know?
Weeks is nothing. Kickstarter sometimes.
I know. especially in the indie comics world, you know.
Yeah,
God.
Yeah. It was considered to be a little bit of a breath of fresh air compared to 2000 AD in that the creators kept their rights around the characters. It was the idea of Pat Mills, Kevin O'Neill, Mike McMahon, John Wagner and Alan Grant. And they published through Apocalypse Press, who was owned by Neptune Distribution, who also owned Trident, which is another sort of indie name from back then. Some of the strips in it, Martial Law, which we talked about recently, Mutomaniac by Mills and McMahon, which is crazy. I'd read that this morning. Macabre, Sex Warrior, The Driver. The Driver's fucking mental.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love the fact that The Driver has some issues where fuck all happens apart from me drives. You know, like the first issue he appears, he literally just drives by a train and the train just looks at the stuff on the back of his truck as he goes by. And that's the issue. And it's not, you know, I mean, I've got it in front of me right now. And you're like, right, okay, something's going to happen. Oh, no, all right, that's it. But it was so good, though. At the time, you were like,
yeah, it was.
You know, it's just got this wee, no matter how ugly you are at the end. And that's the whole strip. But there was something, I think Toxic in general, the whole package was just so exciting. Yeah. Like the colours, like even if you look at issue one and it's got the Tyrannosaurus Rex superhero and it's got like martial law shooting it with these guns and it just looks exciting and the bright green of Toxic written up and the big exclamation mark, you know, there was just something really exciting about it. It definitely caught the eye.
Yeah, you're right. It definitely created covers that you would grab off the shelf, didn't they? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at, I've got issue 7 in front of me with Macabre on the cover, and it's just, even the title is a load of toxic waste spilling out and forming the words toxic. You know, it's just, yeah, don't do it like that anymore. Getting. I hate to be that bloke,
Yeah, you know what you're getting when you pick it up.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
You're not shocked when you pick that up toxic. That wasn't like, I remember actually I'd start hiding them because my dad found them.
Yeah.
I went on holiday, we were fishing. And like the Isle of Whithorn or something like that.
Yeah.
Can't remember. But that was my comic, was Toxic. Yeah. And I'd left it in the, because we're in a caravan at this point, because we went up market, we're in a caravan. We'd normally just done tents by this point, but at this point we're in a caravan. And I'd left in the living room and asked my dad to bring it through. And he brought it through, and you could see him flicking through it when he brought it through. And that was the last one he let me buy.
Oh, wow.
So I had to buy it on the fly after that. You know, I think it was one with Sex Warriors in it. So I think that's,
you're right. But that's the dangerous. 2008 was the same. Crisis was the same. It was dangerous. You know, it had a dangerous quality to it back then. I've got to say, we'll talk about this later, but I've got to tell you, there's a few strips in there where people would probably cause a drama over or something, you know.
Oh, definitely, you know. But that's you know, the kind of the best kind of... That they were pushing boundaries, boundaries, where, especially at a time when... You know, I'm sure Thatcher was she was still in charge by then, wasn't she? It was 91, is that?
Yeah, I think was it John so. Major? Might have been John Major.
I'm sure it was just before. It might have been John Major, but you know what I mean. It's very much that kind of like we've had a Tory government.
Oh, we just had the poll tax riots, didn't we? You know, all that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because I remember I actually bizarrely moved out to England just as the poll tax happened, and in Scotland, because obviously it got done in Scotland for a year first before it got moved to England.
Of course,
so
I remember
moved
that
to
now.
England in 1988. Bizarrely, this is when I started to get Hulk, the Hulk Weekly or whatever it's called, when Doctor Who was fighting Death's Head and stuff. Another comic, from my history. you know what I mean? So it's like, it's very much of its time, but it still works now. And there's not many comics that are of their time that can still be read now and enjoyed.
It's still a pleasure to read this stuff. And it looks great, a lot of it. McMahon's in it, for God's sake. McMahon's amazing. Why, you know, there's loads of stuff in here. Good. So the only other thing I was going to mention out of Toxic was it was going to have Button Man in it, but it was considered to be too similar to Accident Man. So Button Man made its way over to 2008 instead, which is interesting.
Ah,
yeah.
Which explains it's one of the best stories that they came up with in the 90s was Button Man.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, 2008. Yeah. That's the one that I still read, you know, because not when recently 2008 has been really good. They've had some hits and misses.
Yeah.
But the good stories are really good.
Yeah.
And the 90s wasn't a time for good stories. You know, they started to become a bit of a lads mag and do that whole, you know.
Yeah, around the Andy Diggle sort of period and stuff like that. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it kind of got a bit, yeah. It was not a comic that became, like Big Dave, remember Big Dave?
Yeah.
Things like that, you know. it's always the era that people look at and go, oh. But I think the problem with that one as well is a lot of people stopped reading it then and never picked it back up.
Yeah.
And they missed things like Trifecta and stuff like that, and, you know.
Yeah.
Like that, pretty much incredible. I remember reading actually Trifecta. I know we're not talking about 2000, I'm sorry, but I remember reading Trifecta as it went along,
yeah.
And see when it got to the reveal about all the three stories being involved in the same time, I lost my shit. I genuinely, I when I clicked, I was just like, I looked around for people to tell, but there was no one to tell because no one cared that I was in my current group. Because it was before I was writing comics. I didn't really know many people that were into comics and that were reading 2000 AD. But it was that moment. I think that's why I talk so much when I talk to people now. But it was
Yeah,
that
I'm the
moment,
same.
and I was just like, oh my God, they totally, it's like the dead man moment. You know, it's like one of those moments, you know, where you're like, fucking hell.
Yeah, I'm the same, man. I mean, I was a boarding school kid and I was reading comics. I didn't have any friends at home because all my friends were at school, you know. So in the summer holidays and the Christmas holidays, I'd just read comics, you know, and stuff like, you know, Dark Phoenix died or, you know, something like that. I'm like, fucking who, you know, there was no one to tell. There was no internet to go on. And like, you know, there was no comic shops. You get in through the newsagents and the woman behind the counter in the newsagents just looked at me weirdly whenever I bought comics, you know. So sort of, you're right. There was no one to talk to for years, was it? And now it seems like all we do is talk about comics. But yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, even like that's newsagents. That's where I bought. Like, I remember buying the Batman Nightfall issues. You know, the one where Batman gets his back broken. I was buying that from a local newsagent, and the whole Death of Superman thing, which obviously we know came because of Image, you know, and they had to get their readers clawed back. But you know, but that's where I was buying them. I was buying them in a newsagent because it was the Forbidden Planet in Glasgow at that point. It was in Glasgow, and it's quite far away. So that's where you. That's where you. That's it's funny because back then you could just walk into a newsagent, and the thing is, you'd buy any comic you found in a newsagent as well.
There's
You
whatever
know,
was
you'd buy it
left.
in, yeah, because you know there was only like they would only get 10 in or something, and they were random sometimes. You wouldn't get a specific, you know, it's not like you would get a run of Batman. You would literally have like, I got three Batman comics in the last 4 months, and you know that's all they had. But there's like six came out in that time, you
Yeah,
know.
oh, completely. And it's the reason I own issues of, I had no interest as a child in Spider-Woman or Dazzler, but it's why I have issues of those. It's also why I got into stuff like Conan, because all that was left on the shelf, I was a superhero kid, all that was left on the shelf was Conan, so I was buying Conan, you know, so that was what we saw, yeah. Yeah,
Conan was always a classic.
for Accident Man. So Accident Man
Yeah,
didn't
sorry.
appear in every issue of Toxic. It appeared in issues 1 to 6, 10 to 16, and 17 to 24, so it wasn't in everything. But it was drawn by three separate artists. I think we'll probably talk about them all separately, dude. So, the opening story, and probably, I don't know about you, but my favourite is Martin Eamond.
Oh,
Written
definitely.
by Pat Mills and Tony Skinner, incidentally. Yeah.
It's the lines. Everything's so square and like, you know, it just,
His
you know, it's
inking,
the kind of
yeah.
it's like, yeah, it's like, you know, it's the kind of artwork you don't see anymore because it's visceral. It's I know I keep using that word, but it's visceral and it's very anarchic, and it's like you feel like you're reading. It feels like it's part of the story more than just being, you know. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no,
Because
I
it
do.
feels
Yeah,
like it's very much in the nature of the story rather than just being, because if it was too pretty, it wouldn't look right.
this is
That story.
underground punk. This is the sort of artwork you'd
Yeah.
see in the back of a punk fanzine back in the day. You know, it's rough and nasty and fucking violent and bloody and heavily inked, and everyone looks a bit strange and a bit abnormal and a bit like those really rough blokes you used to see down the pub. You know, it's
Yeah,
that
yeah.
sort of thing, isn't
I
it?
mean, the anatomy, it's not even like that. It's like not perfect. Like the anatomy's not always great, and like, you know, whatever. But you don't care because you're just invested completely in the art. What is it? Martin Eamond, is it? It's Martin Eamond, isn't it? Yeah. And yeah, but no, that's my favorite run. I mean, I've heard apparently some people, their favorite run is the third guy. What is it? John Erasmus or whatever his name is. But no, definitely for me. For me, it's Martin Eamond. Always has been, because that's the iconic image, you know, with a black bodysuit on. You know, it's the iconic Accident Man, you know.
And he's, I think also that's the one that we were first exposed to when we first saw it, and we were like, what the fuck is this? You know, yeah,
Yeah, that
Pat's
there was a lot of
gone
that in
for
the
it
first
again.
issue, you know. Yeah, no, yeah, he's totally. Cause, and it's hard to describe how exciting it was when it first came out,
I think you're right.
because you don't. We've not. It's like talking about Image when Image came around, or when, you know, all the exciting things that happened in comics back when it happened. If you weren't there to experience it, you can't, because there's been nothing like that in the last, like, what? I can't think of anything like that in the last 10 to 20 years in comics anyway. I mean, you've had big books like, you know, Your Walking Dead or whatever, and like big titles and big events, but they're not anywhere close to the extent that they were back then. You know, you felt this kind of buzz of excitement. Maybe it's because I'm old now, I don't know. But
Yeah, I
back
think
when
we're also a
Toxic
little bit
first came
more
out, people.
cynical now. We see the events in, you know, event books and even The Walking Dead. We think, oh, they're going to kill another character off to get a, you know, to
Yeah,
get a bump in sales or
exactly. You
something.
know, or it's, oh, they're just trying to bring more sales in. And because I think the problem with the DC and Marvel thing when they keep rejigging everything, is they know that there's a spike in sales for a few months and then it goes down, and then you know within a year or two they're going to do it again.
Yeah.
And it, you just get bored of it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, in the 2000 days when they'd killed the Johnny Alpha and you're like,
Jesus.
Oh, wow. Because he didn't come back for a long time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
in the words of music, they're just living for the weekend, aren't they? That's what they're doing. They're living for that sort of short-term pleasure of getting a few more quid in, and then they'll panic in a couple of months when it's fucking shipped off again, you know. But, yeah, I know what you mean. So Martin was born in 1969. Sadly, he killed himself in 2004. He was also known by the names Marty Fuck and MFE, which I'm sure you approve of. I certainly do.
Yeah, it says everything you need to know about his art.
It does,
really,
it does,
you know.
Yeah. He designed covers for Glenn Danzig. He did White Trash with Gordon Rennie in Blast magazine, and I think some of it appeared in Heavy Metal as well. He didn't do much mainstream stuff. He did a little bit of Lobo for DC, and he'd signed a cartoon deal in Los Angeles just before he killed himself. I think he wrestled with depression through his life, but his trademark Wild and Ugly, you know, Dangerous and Rock and Roll, is what really carries this story for me. And this is the story that features in the movie, isn't it? This is the opening.
Yeah,
part.
Yeah, that's the story that features in the movie. Yeah, yeah, it's the they've two of the hitmen. In the film, it's Mick and Mac, but in the comic, it's Chris and Jim, and it's an American and the British Special Forces.
Yes,
and they kill his ex-girlfriend, and then he finds out. His ex-girlfriend who left him for a woman, and he finds out that it's that there's something not quite right going on, and you know, goes on the hunt.
Yeah, and he adds Martin adds some brilliant bits. So is it post-murder depression or something? He gets, isn't it? It's like PMS or something, isn't it? Post-murder.
Yeah. Because it's like when he goes into the club, isn't it? When he goes into the club and just completely annihilates everyone in this club because there's just some random guys that are like...
decides to have a fight.
Fucking just goes in. And the artwork in the fight is just...
Oh,
it's just incredible. You know, like, because the letterings, obviously, like the sound effects are like drawn into
it, you know?
So like the whole thing when it's like block it, whoop, grab it, snap it, you know, and you're like... It just looks amazing.
And the sinewy dangerousness of this sort of lank-haired geezer is just incredible. And he uses all these sort of different fighting styles. Thai kickboxing, Wing Chun, karate. You know, he moves through them all. And everyone he's not just knocking them out. He's, you know, breaking their, snapping their legs and arms. And one of them's got a T-shirt on who he kicks in the face that says, "I was born for dying." And one who he's about to stick his fingers in his throat while he's on the floor says, "I'm a fat bastard with a busted nose," his T-shirt says.
Oh, so yeah, it's amazing.
Very clever, yeah. Apparently,
I like the T-shirt, even the T-shirt of the bouncer guy when he's walking in. What's it? What, let me get here. Is it King Seat Mental Hospital Day Release, the guy who's wearing the T-shirt?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just something, you know.
Yeah.
Have you noticed as well, like just looking there, there's that "I'm a fat bastard" is the first one, and then it's "I'm a fat bastard with a busted nose," and then by the last image of him is "I'm a dead fat bastard."
Oh, yeah, it's, yeah, yeah. So,
it's those wee jokes. I mean, that carries right on, even when other artists take over, that kind of carries on, the kind of wee jokes, especially in the Dark Horse years.
Yeah.
But it's good to have that kind, because it makes you feel like you're in the joke.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally, yeah. I do love that scene. I always did think, well, Pat's got a very dark sense of humour that appeals to me. But the Pat and Tony Skinner, I've never met Tony actually, but I understand they're very much sort of akin in their thoughts about stuff. I think Tony has more of a knowledge of sort of firearms and martial arts and stuff, which is why Tony and Pat did, much to their chagrin, did Punisher 2099. I think they did that together.
Yeah.
But the yeah, so they use all this martial arts stuff. But he goes in a pub, so he secretly kills this bloke and makes it look like he's hung himself, you know. And then he goes, and so he's keeping his secret that he's a hitman and this sort of tough guy to a secret. And then he goes in a bar and like literally kills everyone in the bar. And I'm thinking, it's not keeping it a secret, is it? But he has to do it to get it out of his system, is the explanation, isn't it? You know?
It's so unfitting with the character because he does that kind of shit the whole time. He's like, this is what I'm doing, but he's got this side to him that has the, you know, like I can't explain it. But there's a side to him where he just, he's got the way he lives his life and he's got the way his rules, but he's got this anger problem where he just lets go and he's just like, fuck the rules that I've just made up. I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want for the next fucking, you know, few hours or whatever, a few minutes, and then get back to being like, and then he'll just slick his hair back.
Yeah.
Be like, right, okay, that's me, I'm done. There's always the comb, like the pretty boy comb when he's fighting them. Chris and Jim, you know, and he's just slicking it back and like, right, I'm gone, I'm fine.
Yeah, the hair's got a personality of his own, hasn't it? It genuinely has.
Oh,
The
it's almost like Spawn's cape, you know, his hair.
It is.
I know it sounds daft, but it's like Spawn's cape in the sense that it has its own personality and it just does things. Because this was at a time when I'm not sure if Superman had his long hair yet. I'm pretty sure if he didn't, he was about to have his long hair.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of superheroes that starting to have long hair, and it was like this kind of weird kind of... It was very late 80s, I suppose. But most of them are mullets, I guess. Right? But, never mind.
I had long hair at this point. I like to say I had a ponytail, proudly to say that I'd...
I had a ponytail. I had long hair from the age I was about 8, I think. That was me until I got a bit older and I started to go grey, and then I shaved the sides and it went a bit frizzy, so I went, oh, I'm just going to cut it.
Good. There's an intro to the hardback which says that Tony and Pat created the character without an artist in mind, which is interesting because it seems very specifically done for Eamond in this scene, in this sort of short part of it. But he actually left the book because he wanted more violence, he sort of said. Strangely,
I mean, the violence is what he was really good at as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Like,
too.
Where his book's at the best is when there's violence, because you felt the movement, and there's not many people that do movement well. You know, a lot of the time it just looks like a static image with stuff going on, but I don't know if it's because of his lines or because of the manic kind of nature of what he was doing, but you felt like there was movement there. You actually, you know, you could feel the fight going on. Does that sound daft? Yeah. But you know what I mean? You actually knew there was a fight going on, it wasn't like just some outstretched fist. You know, because when he punched people, he punched into people. You know, there's always like this, like concave bit, you know, where the face. You know?
And there's a sort of, there's an overextension of his limbs that just works really well. He's so lanky. He's drawn so lankily. There's moments where he's sort of overstretching and, you know, turning things around and spinning things around. And it just totally works from the way he does it. You know, it's an over-exaggeration, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite like the end of RoboCop, you know what I mean? But it works really well. You know, there is something really good about that. Because it's almost like you forgive him, though, because it's almost as if that's how good I punch. You know, I punch so good that my arm extends like Inspector Gadget or something, and just, you know, go Gadget punch, you know.
Yeah.
No.
And then we get the amoral attitude of him. I mean, it's a revenge story without having a redemption in it, is the way I always think about this first sort of part of it. But it's sort of pressed again. So we've had all this fighting, we've had all this killing, we've had all this enjoyment from it, and then it's pressed again by it goes back. And is it a supermodel or some model he's going out with? And she said, "I don't turn up at your beck and call every time you have a hard day at the stock exchange," because he tells everyone he gets his money from the stock exchange. As though, it's not like that, Donna. I've been thinking about you all day. And he's like doing that emoji thing with the eyeballs up, looking up in the sky. You know, this sort of, oh, here we go. And I really love Donna. And like, it's like totally manipulative and self-obsessed, isn't he? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but it's one of those books where he is completely misogynistic. He is completely misogynistic, but it works really well because it's like a satire. It's a satire of yuppiedom in that kind of era.
Yeah, totally.
And so it could be misread, I suppose, but it's also one of the most homoerotic comics I've ever read in my life.
Oh, later on in Dark Horse bits, it's that way, super that way.
Oh, yeah, when they go to the sex club and all that kind of stuff, and he's doing all the military things, and they're all dressed in their fatigues, and he's in like this little like fanny pack thing, and he's like, you know.
Yeah.
Like dressed like Mr. Motivator running through it, and he's like, I'm not gonna wear this stupid stuff, because he's all about his fashion, his style, and it becomes becomes so satirized that's what makes him so good, because he is the embodiment to the extreme of all those yuppies, the ones with the mobile phones, you know, with the massive mobile phones at the size of a house, you know.
He totally is, isn't he? Because he's just about the cash, you know, he's about getting the next thing, he's about getting the next motorbike, he's about getting this, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
And that's one of the good things they put in the film as well. Sorry to talk about the film as well. Is that's like, you know, that's what I just want to buy a motorbike. And then in the film, he turns up in the motorbike because that's what he wants to buy, you know. And it's all about the next big thing, you know, the next car, the next bike, the next nice suit, the next, you know, Gucci or whatever. You know.
And Pat litters in the other side of the world. So he's sitting there staring at a picture, thinking about his ex-girlfriend. The woman's green movement, that's what split us up when she met Hillary. So Pat and Tony are saying she became a lesbian and left him, you know, like, which is to him is like the greatest insult. You know, he can't hold it in, he can't contain it, it makes him angry, you know.
Yeah, especially because they paint him as such a materialistic kind of, like, because women to him are like objects.
Yeah.
And the fact that this object was taken away from him, because I think that's why he's so hell-bent on getting revenge, is because she's the one woman that went away from him.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, that's not what happens. Yeah. I leave women. You don't, you know, but it's just what makes the character so good.
Yeah, their possessions. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, they're like his new bike, and they're like his, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when we're not talking about the next part yet, but yeah, it's when he goes in the next part, and yeah, it then emphasizes it even more how much things are just possessions to him, and how he just kind of plays everyone to get what he wants.
So he gets a phone call, and the phone call says that she's died. But he continues on with, so this is split up because it was weekly. You get a different title for each, almost like 8 pages, I think it is. The next bit is Murder, Martial Arts, and Heavy Metal Mania, which is like the best thing ever, the best title ever for a...
That's a great, that's something I'd
read. Yeah, exactly. I was thinking of you when I was reading this the other day, thinking you must love this bit. And he has to go, and I think he electrocutes a rock band, doesn't he? I think is what he does.
Yeah, Satanic Mechanics.
That's it.
Satanic Mechanics, yeah.
Before that bit, sorry, I missed out the bit where he goes to his club and he meets all the sort of weird other assassins, doesn't he? So you've got Gary Presley, yodeling axeman, Chris and Jim of the XSES, Corduroy Ken tests out new methods of killing. And Big Mac, he's the landlord next hitman, who was played very well in the movie. So that's his. There's a sort of weird little group of them who reappear in and out of it of the series as you go along, don't they?
Oh yeah, that because it gives them, because they're all just as bad as him.
Yeah,
like they're all exactly the same as him, and that's. So it just shows how he can be the way he is, and that's why it's good that they just appear now and then, like, hey,
And then we get, at the end of the Satanic Mechanics, we get the fight with the two SAS guys, which is really well done. Another really good one. That's the moment where he combs his hair with his bloodied stump of a hand where he's been punching them. And even his knuckles look like they'd cut you, don't they? You know, he's got that sort of thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sharp and pointy, like that's, you know. I love there's a kick as well where it's the completely unnatural angle for a leg to ever be, but that's why it works, because that's what makes it so amazing.
Yeah, so good. Yeah.
But the one, I'm a killer. Bang.
Yeah. So I think we'll... the other thing I wanted to say about Eamon's work is, fucking, he draws the best dogs in the world. The best Rottweilers.
Yeah.
He gets... Axon Man, Mike Fallon, his name is, gets attacked by these Rottweilers. And it's... I mean, I love dogs, but this is so well done. They're the most horrific, scary-looking dogs in the world. Yeah, and he's sort of throwing them into walls and trying to escape them, and there's blood everywhere, and they're pulling someone apart, and yeah, incredible moment, really good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's even got the Toxic Prince Rottweiler Weekly, the comic, you know, dogs, Clive, big dogs, you know, you know. so good.
Yeah. I'm just noting we've got a big book to get through, so I thought we might mention some of the art. And the next artist is Duke Myton. He came on board, and he's someone that, according to the introduction, somebody that Tony and Pat regarded as the definitive Accident Man artist. Now, he is a whole different style, isn't he? His style is very different from Eamon's, do you think?
Yeah, it's actually my least favourite.
Okay.
Until he goes black and white.
Right.
Until the black and white stuff worked really well, but the colour, it looks like it was done with a felt tip pen.
Yeah.
And especially in the graphic novels, some like the Complete Accident Man, some of the pages look really garish and horrible. They don't look as bad in the comic. In the comic, they're quite muted. But I don't know if there's something happened in the printing, or if just because colours are different, the way they print the colours now. But he's definitely my least favourite artist.
Wow, okay.
Out of this week.
Interesting. Yeah. He's got a real definitive style. And I think he did some work for Marvel UK as well. He did, I'm just trying to find where it is. Yeah, he's done some Batman and Doom. He did Doom Force. Do you remember Doom Force, that stupid parody comic?
Yeah, I do.
He did Wild Thing and Dark Angel at Marvel UK. Wild Thing is very much in this style as well. He did some Dread and some Fighting American at Titan, which is much more recent. He's for those that don't know his style, I've never seen anyone draw bigger shoulders on people. He's very much, which kind of suits the yuppie aesthetic a little bit, doesn't it? You know.
Oh no, definitely. It's because it's shoulder pads and all that kind of stuff. I mean, like, if it wasn't for the colouring, this would be incredible.
Okay.
It's just the colouring kind of put. I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, because I don't think I'm a price. That's why I love the Dark Horse stuff, because it's in black and white.
Yeah.
And its artwork really works more. But when I first went back to read it, I was like, oh man, that's really quite
really
uncomfortable.
Really
like, you know, a lot of
The black and white stuff.
Yeah, like sometimes the wall in the background blends into their face because it's roughly the same color. But then I look back in the comics, and the comics actually look great.
Right, okay.
So I think it's it's that it's more the graphic novel
modern printing
looked
process.
Horrendous.
There you go. That's what,
And it's like the digital whatever. Because even some, one of the pages even bloody in the graphic novel that I've got, and it's like, what the hell? But you know, because that shouldn't happen. But no, in the comics it looks absolutely, it looks really good. It looks much better.
I get you. Backlit, it's I think there's a bit of what I can see, a bit of what you're talking about there, man. Especially with the reds and yellows in the faces of the characters, especially, seems to be sort of overemphasized. I'm not sure whether he's bleeding heavily from the face or he's just got a very wrongly colored red face. You know, there's a bit of that.
Yes, especially at the start with Sifu Lo, his master, you know, that bit, because the walls are orange and their faces are orange, and you know, it's like, right, okay.
Yeah. So that, being a Bruce Lee fan, you know, I love anything, even the sort of real shitty, you know, versions of, you know, Bruce exploitation movies. This touches on the Bruce Lee mythology, that Bruce Lee had been killed with this, what's it called, the vibrating palm or something like that.
It
creates a lethal dissonance that disrupted Lee's internal organs, and it was Fallon's mission to learn this technique, which is where there's sort of the nest. I mean, I hope they do an X-Man 2. It got announced recently on Kung Fu Movie Guide, the podcast. Scott Adkins announced that they were going to definitely be doing it, and I'd love to see them.
Oh yeah, he's desperate to
I'd love to see them go this way with it. This would be brilliant.
Right.
The Hitman Awards would absolutely be brilliant. I would love to see that.
No, that would just be incredible. It's about, it would just work so well.
So it starts off with this this sort of legendary murder touch, and he needs it. He says it's the best possible way to show how people have died. So he's sort of conning this master into trying to get taught it, and he also goes and kills this guy by drowning him in the bathtub. He's a sort of slightly infantile older bloke who's got a good looking girlfriend because he's rich, and he goes and drowns him in the bathtub, which is a nice little sequence, I think, you know.
Yeah, especially I like the fact that the rich guy's just playing with these battleships in his bath as well. It's just something really funny. It's that kind of whole satire thing, but it just works really well.
Yeah, and I think you can see Pat's writing here, can't you? As we know Pat now, he's got that sort of anti-establishment, anti-big business, you know, anti the big man, the bully, and he's playing off Fallon against that a bit. You know, he's killing people that I think Pat would probably maybe like. Not assassinated. Let's not say that. But, you know, possibly at some point.
No, I mean, you know, Pat, obviously, he also, just to complete understand, he's got the quote for issue. He'd quoted us first, gave us a quote for issue two.
Oh, wow.
So, like, issue one. And so issue two is a quote from Pat Mills, because we got it from issue one. Because we met him at a convention in Dundee. It was actually just, it was the book week in Dundee, and they had this wee comics day.
Okay.
And in this wee hall, and he was there. And then Accident Man just came out, the graphic novel of Accident Man just came out. And Janine actually went over and spoke to him for ages. I was, because I just started in comics and never would talk to anyone.
Yeah.
But back then, I wasn't as talkative with people because I'm antisocial. I just like to spend time in the corner hating people.
That's why we get on so well.
So Janine, he loved it. He loved it. And the reason I bring it up is because it's like exactly what you say, you know, the kind of satiric character of Matt in City of Lost Souls. He kills people.
Yeah.
You know, but the ones that he ends up going after in the comic, I know the victims that he's got are all got stories and he's misrepresented them. But the ones, as you go into the comic, the people he actually starts to kill just for, like, for them, it's actually, you know, I think people that you would like to see.
Yeah,
dead,
exactly.
Like,
we wouldn't do anything about it, but we occasionally might daydream about it. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
You can really you can to sleep perchance to dream.
Exactly. No intentions here. This is not a conspiracy. Yeah, good.
No.
So, do you think? I mean, after this, we get the actually really well written, unsurprisingly well written, Hitman Awards, and various people get awards. Black Widow gets one for the most expensive hit. And then someone who's actually died, his son turns up and collects the award, doesn't he? And he walks up and he says, oh, but but to say on behalf of Maurice's behalf is his son Jean-Jacques, and he walks up and just says, this is for his speech collecting the award. He shakes the hand of the bloke giving it out. He said, "You're all mad," and goes and sits down. And I like, brilliant. That's just excellent. Everyone's got these sort of shit-eating grins on their faces. Yeah, so good.
Yeah, the, and this is the award for the most stupendous cock-up of the year as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And doesn't and then Fallon wins one, doesn't he? Hitman of the year.
Yeah, yeah, he wins. It's Hitman of the Year he wins, yeah.
Again, a man who takes great pleasure in killing people so it looks like an accident, has turned up to this big award ceremony in a DJ and has won the award for Best Hitman of the Year. So, you know, I don't know how much of a secret he is that he kills people this way, but that's what he's doing. Yeah.
I just love that it's that constant, you know, juxtaposition of no, I'm completely secret and no one knows what I do. I'm going to an award ceremony to win an award for the best hitman of the year. Because clearly, although there are accidents, I make sure everyone knows that I did it.
Yeah.
Which is it's classic.
And I got a video of him doing
it. It's classic yuppie, isn't it? It's classic
exactly.
yuppie.
Exactly. It's like, oh, I'm just giving all this money to charity. You know, it's like that, isn't it? It's the
Oh, look, I've given this much money to charity this year. Why don't I look and then, you know, just posting about it and like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
having a big check, a massive check. There you go. There's your charity check. It's like, if you really wanted, you know, you could just do that on the down low. No one would know.
Make sure everyone knows on my Twitter. Yeah, exactly. It's like that. This is where we get into. I used to have a couple of questions to sort of throw it in the middle once we the listeners sort of kind of figured out where we're going with this and what we think of it. Do you think this is overly nihilistic? Do you think it's too much?
No.
Okay, I agree with you totally.
But that's me. But I'm quite. I like nihilistic things. I like nihilistic. I mean, some of my comics can be quite nihilistic and stuff as well. I think it's over the top because I think it's so over the top. It becomes, as I said a few times, it becomes like a satire.
Yeah, I'm down.
And that's why it works really well. If it was taking itself too seriously, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, I think you're right, man.
You know, the comic wouldn't work. But because, you know, Mike Fallon's like, oh, I'm this hitman and I've got these rules and I'm all secret. But he goes to these award ceremonies and he's constantly breaking those rules. It makes it work. You know, I think if it was too serious, but Pat Mills, you know, even when he writes his serious stuff, you know, there's always this kind of edge.
Yeah, there is. There's always, I call it the Mills verse or the Pat verse, you know, there's always something. And I think if you take this comic as a totally serious comic about hitman, you're missing the point. Totally. You know, it's completely satire.
Oh, yeah. You've got something seriously wrong with your upstairs if you think it's a serious comic about a hitman who, especially, and even just the names of the characters, you know, the yodeling axeman, you know, it's
I mean,
you're not finding that.
I think the movie was certainly played for laughs. You know, he's there's moments in it where I actually think it's Atkins' best acted movie. I mean, that and the Hitman 4, which I watched the other night. But there's moments in that they couldn't go as far as the comic. You know, I think I would have loved them to, but I don't think the public would have understood it. You know.
Oh, not at all. Yeah, because it's so extreme.
Yeah.
It's so extreme. Like the bit with the build, and not in this one, but in the last story with the bulldozer, when he's bulldozing off the edge of the thing, you know, things like that. You know, it's just.
I'm just looking at the bit now where he goes and says, "Oh, Bambi," and he meets a deer. That you think this ain't going to end well, is it? You know what I mean?
No, it's not going to end well at all. No. because this is the guy that sneaks all the drugs through in the animals, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we would explain each story in this, but there's, I don't know how many pages of it. The digital show's 234 pages, so I'm not going to put the listener through every story. I think it's worth encountering themselves. I think there's a comparable thing to be talked about here. I think The Punisher was on its uppers at the time. It was like extremely popular. I think we'd just seen a book like Vigilante come and, you know, be sort of reasonably popular. I think Mac Bolan books were still being published and still being read a lot by people, as was books like The Destroyer and the sort of ninja books, I think, at the time. New England Library was putting out a lot of stuff that was, you know, edgy and, you know, torturous and murderous and stuff like that. But this, I don't know whether it's just because it's English and because I appreciate Pat's sense of humour that I think it fits in with any of those. I don't know about you. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I even see it fits in with, like, the kind of James Bond of its thing as well.
Yeah, that's true. Really true.
If you talk about the over, everything that was going on in pop culture at the time, it's a satire of that as well. You know, the kind of the suave, sophisticated guy that's a secret agent, but everyone knows who he is, and he walks in just saying, "Hi, I'm James Bond."
Yeah.
All right, cool. You know what I mean? Like, he's not got a pseudonym. He just walks up and goes, "I'm James Bond. Here's my my MI5, whatever it is, card. And yeah, I'll just pay for everything, and I'm a rich man that everyone knows about, but I'm a secret agent that no one's meant to know about. It's that no one ever talks about in James
Yeah,
Bond.
and I think.
But it's the same thing with Mike Fallon and the Hitman of the Year, but no one knows about me. You
Yeah.
know, it's makes it
Do you know
funny.
what it also speaks to? It's the cocaine blizzard that was the late 80s and early 90s when it, let's face it, you know.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, the whole that's yuppies again.
Yeah.
It's the satirization of yuppies in general. But no, that was there was lots of that going on,
Awful
wasn't
lot.
there?
Yeah, I mean, when you think we'd come out of, what was the second Summer of Love? Was that like 87 or something when MDMA and LSD hit? And everyone instinctually rebounded off that and went the opposite way and just did a load of Charlie. Yeah, and everyone was fucking annoying and talking about what suits they wear and throwing around money. And, Harry Enfield, he was sort of makes jokes about it through most of his career. These people were just bumptious idiots who just talked cash all the time. And Fallon is the, for parts of this, whilst you do want him to win, he's the epitome of it often, you know.
Oh yeah, he's not a good guy. He's not the good guy in the comic, even though it's his own comic. He's that's what makes it so good, though. It's because you enjoy it kind of a bit when he gets hit and he gets done in.
You do.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can
but
get him.
He barely survives a lot of things. I do think, he takes a lot of fucking digs. He's not like, some superheroes. Not like Superman. He doesn't. He never comes away unscathed.
Oh, no. I mean, like, even the fight with Chris and Jim in the last story.
Yeah.
He gets completely broken. He's quite done in by the end of it, but it's almost like, what is it, the end of A Better Tomorrow, a film that I loved when I was younger.
Right.
And at the end of it, it's just the three guys lying in chairs. It's a John Woo film, and at the end of it, the three guys lying in the chairs, and they're fucked.
Yeah.
They've just went through this big massive battle, and they're just covered in blood, like hardly able to breathe, and it's that makes it more real.
Yeah, I watched The Raid 2 for the first time the other day. I'd never seen it. And the fucking fights in that, some of them, I love the film first. Absolutely love it. But some of the fights go on so long, you think, how is not every bone in his body broken by this point? It's similar
no,
to that.
Totally,
yeah.
cool.
Do you think that this would work now? Do you think if they created it at a company, it would work now? What do you think?
I don't think it would work the way it's written.
Right.
There now, because what it's satirizing isn't really there anymore.
Right, okay.
Everyone's materialistic now.
Yeah.
It's not just rich people. Everyone's materialistic. Everyone's got needs to get the newest phone.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you're on, if you have no money, if you work full time, if you're on the, it doesn't matter what scale of the social ladder you're on. Everyone needs a new phone. Everyone needs a big telly. Everyone needs, this, and this.
Yeah.
So it's harder to satirize someone if everyone's doing it.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. Society really has moved on. It's I think unfortunately stuff like Instagram has been a something that has brought everyone up to chase everything all the time, hasn't it?
I mean, you've got kids wanting to be YouTubers.
Yeah.
And you've got a thing called influencers on Instagram, which I still think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And all they do is look pretty and get free products. And people aspire to be that. And that's cool. If that's your aspirations in life, then on you go, mate. I'll doff my cap, but I have no interest whatsoever in being that kind of famous for not being famous. Like, even like, not to mention any names, but that very famous family who, in America, that had something to do with O.J. Simpson at one point. And, it's like the same kind of thing with them, but they're famous for not doing anything.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, that's the kind of materialistic world we live in now, where there's a lot of people that just... I mean, look at Fyre Festival as a classic example of how everyone was sold this thing that
on image.
No one had a clue what to do about it. They just had, it was an image, and just, oh, we've got all these bands playing it. The bands are like, are we? And, then it all went horribly wrong. And that's the classic example of the materialism of a lot of people.
Yeah, completely. But, and the consumerism and materialism it's all tied up. I think I like to think that they could bring him back, but he would... I think you'd probably get sued every 5 minutes because whoever was, if I had any influence on who would get killed or be the point of the assassination in a comic, I would be emailing Pat to say whoever the person was that was annoying me that week on television, be it Simon Cowell
Who
it's going to be, would be who Accident Man was hired to kill. You know, so there's that to it, isn't it?
See, if they'd done it like that, actually, that would work really well. I've been saying no, it won't work because of that. But I think the character might not work as well, but if he was going after people like the materialistic people, like, then it would actually work really well. No, that would actually, what you're saying, actually, that would work really well. I would totally be
yeah,
sure of
it's
that.
a sort of thinly veiled version of somebody who, you know, is particularly annoying to me. I wrote a comic years ago called Bingo Bonanza where it started off with someone murdering David Beckham, which just cheered me up. I don't know if anyone bought it, but it cheered me up. Do you know what I mean? Because Beckham was a particularly fucking childish idiot at the time. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's as it's done now, I don't know, actually. I think of the three artists, I think, I don't know who would work now. I don't know.
I don't think any of them would work now, to be honest with you. Just because that's not what art really looks like now, you know, in comics. Even, I mean, I'm reading 2000 AD just now, and there's one of the stories, I can't remember the name of it, and I've got it right here, so give me a second, I'm just going to have a look. And the artwork is really, I think it's trying to be, it's the Diabolics, or whatever it's called. It's written by Gordon Rennie, and it's Dom Reardon does art. And I just, it's almost like it's trying to be, Mike Edmund, but it's not. Martin Edmund, even. But it's just not. It doesn't work.
Right.
It's not. It just looks, it's almost jarring now, especially in a comic. I'm just trying to think. Sorry,
I'm floundering
my words here. Because the story just before it is The Order, and it's this beautifully painted work, and then Diabolics comes in, and it's like, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work in that environment. You know, the artwork just doesn't work.
I think we were more prepared for the everyone goes on about, oh, I'm into DIY these days, but I don't think they really are. They think DIY is, you know, a photocopied zine about their cats or something. But I think we were more prepared for the DIY, the punk element, the roughness to it, the edge. You know, we were reading it partly because we enjoyed the stories, but partly because we knew it was that dangerous element. And I don't think the internet, calling everyone in the world in one go, but I don't think the internet would understand Martin Eamon work. I don't think they would. Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't think so, which is sad because his work was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, I would still buy it. I mean, if he came out in a comic today, obviously you can't for reasons, you know, but I would still buy it because I love that style. I love that visceral style. But it doesn't work. Like the 2000 AD story, I mean, that Diabolic, if you put that in another thing, or if you put that, like Judge Dredd magazine, you get the collections. If you put that in the collection there, it would work really well. If it was a small press comic, it would work really well for me because I like comics like that. But in 2000 AD, it just, the artwork doesn't work as well, which is sad because it goes to show that, you know, there's not a place for all the art that you like, because I like the art in it as well. It just doesn't fit.
Yeah, there's a difference between us liking the art and it actually selling, I suppose. You know, is the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you'd never see Iron Man drawn.
Yeah, I'd love to see Iron Man. I'd love to see Master of Kung Fu drawn because they'll be bringing it back when this stupid movie comes out. You know, I'd love to see that sort of style would come out. But yeah, I know what you mean.
I've actually got a load of Master of Kung Fu comics, bizarrely, because I used to go to, when I was a kid,
I love Master of Kung Fu.
Digressing again, as I always do. There was a comic shop underneath the Battlelands.
Oh, okay.
The Battlelands, Sunday Market, the Barras. Right, and there was a wee comic. It wasn't a shop, it was a stall, and I always used to go in there, and they always used to have the 70s comics, like Masters of Kung Fu, Supervillain Team Up, you know, Doctor Doom, Submariner, and stuff like that, and the Star Trek comics and stuff. And that is so many comics. Because my mum and dad would be looking at.
I never got to go to Barrowlands. One of my favourite albums was Big Country at Barrowlands. It's an incredible sound. Mm. Amazing.
Yeah, that's good. I've been seeing
many
gigs there, and it's very good, I assure you. If they still put gigs on there, if there's ever a good one, come up, man.
Yeah,
I'm
desperate to come up north of the border. You can tell, because nearly all of my guests on this are from Scotland.
It's because you don't see us all the time, though, and this is the only chance you get to talk to us.
Yeah. But I do actually think that Scotland has retained this comic reader, comic fan element that we're missing in London. Everyone in London now thinks, oh, is it cool to be into graphic novels? I'll read a graphic novel. You know, not everyone, but there's that element. And in Scotland, it's just like everyone's in it to win it. I've said it before. And you guys up there, firstly, it's the home of British comics, but everyone up there fucking loves comics. You know, don't matter what they are, you know.
If you go to any of the kind of comic, mainly comic cons, which there are a few up here, it's great because like the small press guys are doing really good work. There's a lot of really good small press.
Yeah, there is.
And a lot of the small press is easily, like if you look at like John Lees, for example, he's writing for IDW now.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you had Nils Lawrence and Colin Bell, who'd done Dungeon Fun. They were doing the backup strip of
Yeah,
Doctor
I
Who
mean
for a while and stuff like
we're
that.
doing something
Well,
with Fraser at
there's
the
a lot.
moment, Fraser Irving,
Oh,
the
he's
Tribute
so
Press and
good.
stuff. Yeah,
So good.
there's
He's
such good
ridiculous,
guys,
Fraser.
and that Earth 2 podcast was like started listening to that, and Johnny and all the Dundee crowd, Dave Roberts and all that lot. Yeah, there's genuine love for it. It's I'm sometimes a little ashamed that we don't in London. You try and talk to someone about, Al Milgrom or Steve Gerber or someone, and they just look at you blankly. And I think I'm at a comic event here. What's wrong with you? And all they want to talk about is, I don't know,
Rob Liefeld.
yeah, or Koyama Press or some shite like that. Something with no story but just looks colourful. What are you, a child? Yeah, it's like that.
It's like a lot of the stuff that came out from Image when Image first
Yeah,
started.
yeah.
You know,
I think we're.
you could tell it's artists that were
I
doing
think
it.
we're
You know.
seeing a turn. Like everyone wants to talk about fucking Steven Universe or Rick and Morty, and I'm like, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about comics, good comics,
Yeah. Or Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, I like Dungeons and Dragons, but I've noticed recently it's a lot of Dungeons and Dragons taking
Yeah,
up
it's kind of cool
space
now,
and
isn't
like,
it? Again, yeah.
and it's weird because I've been that's it's been an uncool part of my life for so long, and I don't want it to like I like my comics to be comics, and I'm
Yeah.
not trying to diss anyone that does Dungeons and Dragons comics in any way, shape, or form, but I'm not one that's going to go after an existing can't even think of the word an existing universe and try and write comics in
Yeah,
it. You know,
no,
it's quite
agree.
of a It's, I don't get that. I write comics for myself, and I write comics that I want to write in universes that I want to write about. And if you want to write about D&D, that's cool. On you go. But I don't want to read
Yeah.
it because I play D&D. You know, I don't.
Yeah.
Does that make
Yeah,
sense?
there's a
You
few pretenders out there, aren't there? Yeah.
know, there's the ones that jump on everything
Yeah, there
new.
are.
Like, oh, this is the next thing, right? We're going to
Yeah,
jump
let's
on
do a
that.
comic
All
about
right,
that.
cool. And you can see them, and yeah, you see them from afar, and you're like, oh, you've got a comic about that now, right? Cool.
Yeah.
Wasn't surprised there. I could see that one coming,
Yeah,
but never
I
mind.
know. Yeah, definitely. Let's just quickly talk about John Erasmus, who is the third artist in this collection. Your favourite, you were saying, is that right?
No, my favorite's the first
Sorry,
one.
sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, no, Martin is the first one, but I love John Erasmus. Oh, definitely, I love his art. I love it. It's very much of the time as well. It looks painted.
Yeah.
The artwork looks painted instead of,
It's very
it's
2000 AD at the time to me. It reminds me a little bit of that.
Very
Yeah.
2000 AD, yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, to see it looks more like a 2000 AD comic
Yeah, I think you're right.
than the rest.
It's as well. He doesn't do much actually. I don't think he did a huge amount of comics, and mostly he works on storyboards now. If you go to
All
his
right.
website, he did Gotham the TV series, Gentleman Jack. I don't know what that is. 12 Monkeys, I think it's the TV series, and he storyboarded the Chernobyl TV series, which is pretty interesting. Which is quite a series, isn't it?
Oh
Yeah.
wow. Yeah, it's quite
Another one
a
we lost to
hard hitting
storyboards,
one there.
sadly. Yeah, it happens quite a lot, doesn't it? But yeah, interesting. And he draws some great polar bears. He draws some great fights. He draws he's some really interesting use of color as well for me in this.
Yeah, and I love like as you're going on, he wears that snowsuit, the snowsuit he wears. It's just an incredible the design of it and everything. It just looks amazing, and just the way that like there's the scene with the lassie that's all like she was in the first issue and I can't remember her name, but the partner of his ex-girlfriend and how she like the whole thing is that obviously she's trying to become a killer now. She thinks she's a killer now and she's doing all this stuff, and then it's just when she kicks the guy in the face. That is just amazing. That's peak accident man. That right there. It's just
It's full of
amazing,
some great action and some really beautifully detailed shots. I almost put him as like a sort of punk David Lloyd. There's he uses that sort of shadow and not incomplete line on at moments, which works really well. There's like moments where he's jumping over a is it a car with a motorbike? Yeah, jumps over the CIA Land Rover, which because it says CIA on it, obviously, in it on his sort of high powered motorbike. And there's a oh, it's just absolutely beautiful. And he was on it for a lot longer than I remembered. I thought he was just on it for a bit at the end, but this is quite a lengthy little story.
Yeah, so really, a lot happens in it as well.
And then I think we'll just mention because we always say let's do an hour, we never do. But the we'll just mention the Howard Chaykin covers, which are basically Accident Man causing accidents while finoodling with a lady. That's generally the very Howard Chaykin. And we begin to see the sort of leather bondage wear that makes its intro in this story.
Yeah, it's so funny. The story-wise, I think actually the Dark Horse story is possibly my favorite one. Right, I'm like, no, right. The first one's my favorite because that's the one that got me into it. But out of like reading it back now, the Dark Horse story is incredible. And it's so funny, and there's so many little jokes in there, and there's so many little bits like, you know, like the guy wearing a RoboCop versus Predator t-shirt or whatever it was, because that was a strip that Dark Horse were running at the time. There's lots of, you know, the classic kind of things you'd expect from Accident Man, you know, the little digs and the
He's
little
got
kind of
like at one point he's in
little nods and winks.
he's at a party and he's in a posing pouch and it's an elephant posing pouch. So it's almost like, have I shown you my
Yes.
elephant impression? It's just a little play on that joke, isn't it? You know.
Oh no, it's the whole sex club scene in general is just
Fucking mad.
absolutely hysterical. And that's the one that I'm like, it's possibly the most homoerotic thing I've ever
It
seen in my life.
totally is.
And that's when it becomes like this, you know, he's standing there, this peak physical condition thing, and the guy he's with is like this wee chubby, you know, this wee chubby balding guy, you know.
And
Amazing.
the big page, it's not a splash, it's almost a page splash, where he's just blowing holes in people with a gun in his sort of slightly dodgy pair of pants.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Mightn kills on this, actually. Absolutely kills on it. Why he isn't doing more comics now, I don't know. It's absolutely gorgeous stuff. I mean, I'd love to see him in back in comics. And you're right, man, you're totally right. The black and white so pops on this. Absolutely does.
I mean, it's like it wasn't until then that I realized how good his art actually was, because it kind of got muted in the colors when I was reading back recently last week with the graphic novel. Because and it was only and that's why I dug my comics out, because I was like, nah, there's something's went on with the printing of that. I need to dig out the Toxic Comics to have a look to see if it looks the same. And obviously, it looks a lot more muted, and it looks a lot better in the actual issues. But on the page of the graphic novel, yeah, it's not the best.
Cool. Nice one. So, that's the stuff that didn't appear in Toxic. So that's the, was it two or three issues? I can't remember now.
I think
Three.
it's three
Yeah.
issues. I think, well, there's three
Yeah,
covers
I
in
think
it,
you're right, man.
so
Yeah, so three
I
issues. I
think it's.
must dig them out, or must buy them. I don't think I own them actually. I've only got it in the collected thing, which came out of Dark Horse Comics. Pat likes to jump about between companies. We talked about a bit about this with Martial Law a few weeks ago, and I think to me, if this now, if this came out and it's stuck with one company, for example, Dark Horse, I think this would be a great series. I really do.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like, especially if you've done it like not one of these comics that just goes week a month after month after month after month. If you've done like Accident, like Button Man, the way Button Man's done. If you've done like Accident Man, and then the title, and then it was like a
Yeah,
six
so
issue
the sort of dark, the
miniseries,
sort
and
of
then
Hellboy kind of model, that sort of thing.
ah yeah, that would work so well for Accident Man. That would be incredible.
Definitely. So, got a couple of things we're going to do now. Firstly, I'm going to say to you, if you could put, so the world's come around again. Everyone's realised that you and I are right, and they want to create a comic again of Accident Man. You can't use any of the previous artists. Who are you going to put on it? Who would you choose to put on it?
Conor Boyle. I would probably
Oh,
go for
okay.
Conor Boyle actually, because I love
Yeah,
his
like
stuff.
his
I love
darkness.
that he can do the visceral stuff, and he can do the nice and neat stuff when he wants to. I mean, the Hookjaw thing he done for Titan was incredible, and he's one of the small press guys, and I think that's who I would definitely pick. Because a lot of the main comic artists now are too clean.
Yes.
They're too clean for Accident Man. You know, I'm trying to think of names, but I can't. But if you pick up any DC book right now, there's no way
Oh,
they could draw
certainly
Accident
not.
Man.
There's definitely a house
You know,
style developing, yeah. Yeah.
you just wouldn't get the right feel of it. You need someone that has that kind of has visceral edge. They have to have
Yeah.
the edge, or it won't work. There's some comics where you need it, and that's the Accident Man is definitely one of them. So Conor Boyle
Yeah.
all the way, because I love
Yeah, I
his
agree.
artwork.
Yeah,
I
I think
love
that's
his
a good
artwork.
shout, man. I love seeing his Twitter when he puts pictures up. He put one up the other day. Oh, I found this old bit of art, and I thought, that's lovely, man. That's really good. Yeah, he's a nice guy as well. A lot of time for Connor.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy. He's sickeningly
He's
talented.
good.
Sickeningly talented. He's a really good
Oh, is he? I never
guitarist as
knew that
well.
about him.
So, you
Okay.
know.
All right, cool.
Yeah. I actually found out because at one of the conventions was that he brought his guitar with him because they were just about to go home straight after. I was like, oh my God, you play guitar. And obviously, him and Lizzie done a Eurovision thing recently, because obviously, virtual Eurovision. And I'd done a song for it and
No, I didn't
everything. It
know
was
this.
amazing.
Okay.
Yeah. So they done like a virtual Eurovision online, and I was Iceland, so I'd done this weird, you
Yeah,
know, stupid dancey
they're
song for
nuts over there. I like watching
it.
their ones.
That's.
For me, I was gonna say Miller. I was gonna say Frank Miller, but I think then it just gets consumed into Frank Miller world. I was gonna say Howard Chaykin, but then I think it just gets consumed into people seeing it's Howard Chaykin stuff. So I did what you did. I thought, right, well, who in the small press then would do it justice? I think Guns. I think Dan Butcher would do it justice.
Oh yeah, actually no, yeah, he would
I
do
think
well,
he's
yeah.
a good lad.
He's all right, him,
Yeah,
isn't
he made me say
he?
that. No,
No.
but I think he'd be really good.
No, he's done. I've got lots of I've got quite a few things off him, like got him to do
He
stuff
did
in
a
my
couple for
band,
you,
and I've
didn't
got
he?
him to do stuff.
For one of your books.
He done
Is that right?
he done Through
That's
Their
right.
Mental Cover, and he's done a couple of pin-ups for me, and he's done a couple of posters for the band as well. I love Dan's artwork. He's really underrated. I think Dan's really underrated as
He's
an artist.
so instinctual, and he just puts it down. It looks good. He's really good, Dan. Yeah. Sadly, I've never worked with him. I don't think we've ever done a strip together, other than being in the same anthology. We've never worked together, but yeah, hopefully soon.
I actually was trying to get him to colour a strip, one of my upcoming
Okay.
strips for me, but he didn't have the time for it because he was working on something else at the
Yeah,
Hanks
he's
out
working
now.
on the wrestling comic, I think, probably.
But that artwork,
El Marvo.
El
Yeah, that's
Marvel, is
right.
it El
Yeah.
Marvel? Yeah, that's, yeah, I like the first
Yeah,
issue. That's
me
really good.
too. That's right.
Yeah,
So
sorry.
the other thing I was going
Anyway.
to do before we get on a bit to you and our word from our new sponsor, very exciting new sponsor, is I thought I've got the Toxic Reader Census from 1991.
Right, okay, cool. Let's do this. Right.
Right. So I won't do the whole thing, but how much time do you get for your hobbies? A, one evening a week. B, weekends. Or C, 18 months with the possibility of parole after 10.
It feels like 18 months with the
I
possibility for the
think me
last
too.
ten.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it consumes any time I'm at home. I'm trying to, do
Yeah.
stuff. So yeah, that one.
So, this is lifestyle. Section two is lifestyle. You can see them just fucking about and writing this. Select, well, six, we'll just select one of the following words which you think best describes you: cumbersome, lardy, eviscerated, lurking, filibuster, and it just goes on. Flaccid. I'm going flaccid. I'm going, I don't even know what febrile means, but I'm Spartan, anaerobic, mutilated.
I'll go
Let's
for
do
mutilated. That sounds like me. That's what I feel like
it.
right now.
Have you a record? So this is section three, which is health and well-being. Have you a record of dressing up in a cape and tights and saving the world on a regular basis? Yes or no? Of taping the business end of plastic spoons over your eyes, wrapping a towel, wrapping a shower head around your neck, and running around chatting, "Take me to your leader." Or bear in mind, this is "Have you got a record?" By Danny Minogue.
I'm definitely not going to read it. That's amazing. That's
And
actually
because this
amazing.
is kind of taking the piss about the fact that 2000 AD used to have like these. Do you remember you used to write in what your favourite story was and send it in? Yeah,
Yeah.
it's that sort of thing. Just makes me laugh. This form is declaration. This form is correctly completed to the best of my knowledge and belief, and I have not taken it as an opportunity to be silly and write things like "Yes, please" after sex in section one, and you sign it and send it in. Very good. Do not post your form to
That was
us.
so
An
good.
enumerator will be round to collect it when you least expect it. Okay. It's
And
this that's how I like it. You don't get that fun in comics anymore. What's wrong with them? Yeah.
yeah, but I think everyone's scared of
Yeah, I think you're
offending.
right.
I don't mean that in a bad way, but like, you never know what's going to be offensive, especially in mainstream comics. Now, in small press, you can do
Yes.
whatever you want, and
I
that's
try
why
my
small
best to.
press is
Yeah,
so
yeah,
good,
yeah,
is
yeah.
because if somebody doesn't like it, they don't buy it. They just walk past your table, and
Yeah.
that's fine. Or if you tell something, like I've had people come up to my table and be like, "What's this about?" And I tell them, like, "It's not really for me." I love those guys. I love the guys. It's like, it's not really for me because they're not
Yeah.
wasting your time. They don't feel bad. It's not like the ones that come up and then spend half an hour talking to you and go, "All right, and I'll come back later." And it's like, you fucking what?
Yeah.
If you're not interested, just move on. I don't take offense to it because my comics especially are quite
Yeah,
they're niche,
lively.
I
Yeah,
suppose.
yeah, yeah.
They've got a bit of blood and violence. They've got some horror in there. But yeah,
Yeah.
it's weird.
There you
People are
are.
weird.
Right, we're going to pause now for the sponsor. It's a big new sponsor
Oh,
this
do
week. Very
you?
happy. Do you love being angry at things in the world? Could you start an argument in an empty room? Do you need to placate your feelings of inadequacy and quiet those voices that are telling you to actually pull your finger out and help people? Then why not sign up to Twitter? You too can have an opinion about something and shout loudly all day about it without actually doing a damn thing to help. Twitter. Go on. Make yourself feel good. Okay.
That's a big sponsor
Yeah, I
for
think
this
I'm
man.
very
That's
pleased
a
with
big
that one.
sponsor. I feel honoured that that's the
Yeah,
show that I'm
Twitter
on
on
where you've
board,
got
fully
the
on board this
sponsor.
podcast. Yeah, that's not true, but I say it
Oh,
anyway.
totally.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it will be true. Just wait till they hear it and they'll be
Oh,
like,
they will be.
"Yeah,
They'll be
man, they're
driving
right. They
around with a
suck."
bunch of lawyers straight away. Yeah, wishing to give me money, no doubt. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's
Went
going on
straight
with you
into
at the
the empty
moment?
room. Yeah.
James, you got VAO7. I got that about a month ago, I suppose. Very good. Very much enjoyed it. Nice little idea.
Oh,
What
thanks.
else are you up to?
Yeah, We've got the second issue of that working on just now.
Cool. So did you want to tell the listener
so
what that's
was,
about?
That was already bit. So Camp VA07 is so there's a pandemic that destroys all the world's animal life, and then obviously, and then nothing like it is now. And there then aliens come down to save us, basically, which you haven't seen in the comic yet, but basically fast forward to a world where we're living this weird like little house in
so
the
we get
prairie
some
kind of
almost
life.
like two
But there's
time
this
moments in it, don't we? You know.
And it's a really dark undertone that becomes very apparent as
Yeah,
the
we won't
comic goes
spoil
on.
it,
And
but
there's
there's a
a bit of a
reason for
race
it, isn't
riot.
there? There, it's a,
Yeah,
if you think there's no
yeah.
farm animals,
There's
what are
a
you left
race riot
with?
in the middle of the
Yeah,
spell,
yeah.
actually. Oh yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, it's like what would you give up for your life? You know, that's kind of, you know, what we're dealing with there. And I don't, as I said, I don't want to ruin anything, but yeah, it's funny because I was talking to someone about it the other day how it starts with a pandemic and then in the middle of it there's like a big race riot thing
Right.
going on, and I'm like, oh,
Yeah,
you know,
what's happened there?
oops.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was quite
What
worrying.
else are you working on?
But let's not talk about
Yeah,
politics
exactly.
just now. But it's because because you know that's the because it's horrible everything that's going on just now in the world. But yeah, so but that's Camp VA07, and the next issue takes place pretty much exactly where the last one left off, except we go back because you know the story about the president at the start, that's going to
Right,
continue.
okay.
So you're still going to get to know what happens and how we
Yeah,
got into the
I
situation we're
get you.
getting into, but it's all going to be timed as the issues go along to reveal things as they become apparent in the comic as
Yeah,
well.
it
Does
does.
that
No,
make sense?
completely. Having read it, I know exactly what you mean. Is
Yeah.
it set up to be a series or a limited series, or what are you doing?
It depends how long, Jonathan. With all my comics, it depends how long the artist is
Right.
willing to
Okay.
do it.
Yeah.
You know, if Jonathan's the more the when Jonathan turns around and says, "I'm done. I've got an end. So when we need
Get
to
you.
end, I can
Okay.
end."
Good.
You know, but until we'll get to that point when Jonathan turns around and says, "I've had enough," because I like to work with the same artist
Yeah, I get you.
for a
So while you're
comic.
both still
You
enjoying
know,
it and it's still paying the bills or, you know, paying the print run. Yeah, I get you.
yeah,
Never
never
does,
paid
does it?
bills.
No, I know. Yeah.
this is comic book of the year. Other things I've got working on, Transylvania Nights issue two. Now Johnny is close to finishing his labor of love with
Yep,
The
good.
Divided. He's going to be working
Looking
on
forward to that.
that.
It's great, man.
We
I
are.
love the work the way you work together. That the first issue was outstanding. Really good stuff. Yeah.
I've got a lot of faith in Johnny. Like I've got a lot of faith in him, and I know that. Like I'll write some panel descriptions, but a lot of the time I'll just give him what I
Okay.
want. Like I'll just write the script. I very do very little panel descriptions unless it's something I specifically want to see, and I kind of let him just go wild with it because he's got a really because he's studied. It's almost like he studied comics, but I don't think he has. But he's
I
just got
think he
such a good
has. I
knowledge of
think he
what works.
studies artists. I think put it, well, I suppose it's slightly different, but he definitely studies the work of artists. I mean, we've talked about it. Me and him talk about
Definitely.
different artists every week. You know, I love having, you know, my eyes opened up to stuff. He says, oh, he sends me stuff through and said, have you seen this? And yeah, great stuff. Yeah, really good.
I mean, the guy is. I'm very, very fortunate to be able to work with him, put it that way. And he came to me. He's like, "Do you
Oh,
want to do
cool.
something?" I'm like,
Yeah.
"Yes." You know, it wasn't like I went
I got
knocking
to
on
pull
his
my
door.
finger out.
So
I meant to be writing
that's coming
something
up.
for a text piece for the new book of his, so I need to hurry up and do that. I'm fucking terribly behind with it, but yeah, good stuff. Any other comics you're working on? Anything else we got on the go? So you have a close
God, yeah, I've
relationship with
got a
Comic
comic
House, don't
called.
you? They're your pals.
So Comic House pretty much
Right.
publish all my books. I worked as an editor for the
Oh,
Comic House
nice.
anthology, and I helped them. Basically, when I got in a conversation with Pete. I don't know, I've probably told you the story before, but I was bored in London at an MCM, and Pete was just hawking his comic out, and not comic, sorry, at that time it was just a
Okay, yep.
website, and I got in a massive conversation with him about 2000
Okay.
AD and about British comics in general. And how good the British comic scene was, and then I've got him on Facebook or whatever, and then he messaged me a few weeks later talking about doing an anthology, and would that be a good idea? I was like, that's amazing. And then we kind of I helped him put some people together for the first few issues, yeah, and I've worked with him continuously throughout the Comic House thing, and it's been great. It's
Yeah.
been a really good experience. I think without Pete, I'd struggle to make the
Okay,
comics I make.
right.
But having someone with belief
Yeah.
in you to do it and to say, you know, it gives you the faith. So even when I'm struggling, because you know, mental
Yeah,
health's
of
a
course,
thing,
man.
and I struggle with my mental health a lot. And if it wasn't for him, I don't know if I'd still be doing them, which is probably the nicest thing I could ever say about anyone. But he's definitely the The Wind Beneath My Wings.
He's a solid guy, you know, and I think in this, the days of comics is a difficult space to keep going and financially and stuff like that. He's created such a great thing with Comic House. I know that they sponsor the other podcast, I'm on the Awesome Comics podcast, but I really do think that is the best idea for a long time about putting out small press comics.
I mean, you can tell it's a good idea because other people keep trying to do it. Like, you know, there's all these people like, we're going to do this thing that's not been done before. It's like, no, there fucking is. It's called Comic House. It's just over there. Do your fucking research, mate. You know,
and it's growing as well. That's the good thing about it. Everyone I speak to, I say, have you considered Comic House? You know, because it needs to grow. Once it grows, then that's we're done. That's there forever, I think. You know, and we're almost at that point. You know, like Comixology.
Oh, no, I mean, it's such a great, it's an amazing, I mean, to the fact, I mean, like, small press comics, don't sound funny, but I'll buy them, I often lose them. I don't know where I put them in my house. There's like a black hole of small press comics in my house somewhere. So it's great having them on the app. So when I get the new issue of like NBCT, I don't have to go and look them out.
Yeah, I'm the same.
You know, I just wait till it appears in the app or whatever, and then I read it. I read the ones that are already there that I've lost, I can't find, and then read the new ones. You know,
for people a lot of small press people, I don't really want to, but a lot of people want to, you know, make the step up and work for Boom or Marvel or Dynamite or someone like that. You know, and I think, if you've got a central place you can go and look at, see who's up and coming, then that's a good place as well. Yeah.
Oh, definitely as well. Because you can see the books that you can see the people, you can actually look and go, you can see their improvements.
Yeah, you can.
You know, you can see how much they've improved book after book after book after book. And
I've got
another
project on the board, and I often go on there and think, well, who would be good for it? You know, and have a look around, see what's about. Yeah, really. And the other thing I want to talk to you about is the band, dude. Well, so what's happening? I backed the album. I've been playing that this morning. Very good, really good. I haven't actually backed a musical Kickstarter ever, and I don't generally listen to music that's any time after 1981. But I'll listen to your album often on the dog walk. Yeah. So what's happening with you guys? I suppose you're on a bit of hiatus, are you, at the moment, or?
Well, we're on a wee bit of a hiatus, obviously, with everything that's going on. But we had a tour booked for May, which obviously got cancelled with everything that's going on. But that's been reorganised to January.
Okay.
We've got a festival that might go on ahead in September. We don't know yet because it's an outdoor one. And that's in Lincolnshire. We're down to play a few that and a couple other gigs. But obviously, everything's kind of up in the air at the moment. So we don't know really what's happening with gigs and stuff. So we're just working on writing songs. We're hoping to get back in the studio with Toby Jepson. It was hopefully going to be this year, but obviously it'll be next year now.
So for those who don't know, it's She Burns Red is the name of the band, isn't it? Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, She Burns Red, yeah. The EP was called... I can't remember what it's called.
Okay.
Take Back Tomorrow. God, that's embarrassing. It's called Take Back Tomorrow EP. There's six tracks on Spotify, the two singles that we've done previously. I think we've definitely jumped up a big level with the EP before.
It's really Christmas to it, yeah.
We worked, the guy who owns the studio, he worked on some Manic Street Preachers videos and stuff like that, and done videos for the band Shampoo, if you remember them. And it's in Worcestershire, or Worcestershire, whatever the bloody hell you call that thing. That place. It's the sauce, you know,
it's down there. Yeah, yeah.
I'm rubbish with pronouncing it.
We're almost Wales, Scottish, as I like to refer to it. Yeah.
Oh, nice, yeah. Oh God, it's because we played Wrexham the night before. Yeah, so before.
So
we went
this tour you got planned for January, is that going to include Southern Bastards, like my place, or?
Let me think. We've got Manchester, Northampton, just outside of Birmingham, a place called Canic in London.
Good. Well, Northampton and London are not far from me.
That one.
That's not far of a drive. Oh, good stuff.
Oh, cool. Yeah, but we're just kind of keep busy, and it's nice because as I say, I've always been in music, and we've got a really good thing going. We've got a lot of people that really believe in us, a lot of promoters and a lot of press people, and a lot of people are talking
good
about
stuff.
Us, and we're being spoken and along with bands that are really big just now, and it's really good because I mean I've been playing music in bands for over 20 years with varied levels of success, but at least this one, you know, we've been in magazines a couple of times, you know, we're getting somewhere.
So, I mean, people don't really know this about them, but I played in a couple of bands many years ago, and never continued on with it. I grew up on rock music, you know, so it was the thing, you know, before all the nonsense happened that you have to listen to now on the radio with, you know, voice coders and all this sort of thing. And I really felt your music really good. Yeah, I'd recommend it. Anyone's got Spotify, get on and have a look at it. Yeah, definitely. Good. No, my pleasure, man. My pleasure. And okay, so we're going to say goodbye to everyone. I read the outro now. Well, there you have it. Hopefully you got something out of that. You can go over and buy my comics, neveronanything.bigcartel.com. I'm occasionally on Twitter, S-O-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. James, where can people buy your stuff? Where can they find you? Where can they follow you, etc.?
Everything apart from Camp B807 is on Comic House, and Camp B807 will be on Comic House shortly because it's a Comic House book. It's just obviously I like to give the Kickstarter back or something to have it put it out like that. But yeah, you can find all the stuff there. Band-wise, it's sheburnsred.co.uk or sheburnsred.com. I can't remember. It's one of them. And we've got links to all our shit there, you know, and you can find our YouTube and our Facebook and Twitter. I'm Grandmaster Wook, if you want to find me on Twitter. And it's grandmasterwook.co.uk.
Cool.
Is my
You're on
website
Instagram under that as well, I think. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, my, everything's great. Even my Xbox fucking player things in Grandmaster Wook is ridiculous. It's basically, when Phantom Menace came out, I worked in a video shop. And they started to call me Wookie. And I'm like, no. Because there's lots of people called Wookie. And I was like, I'm the best. So I was Grandmaster Wook. And it stuck with me. Because no matter where I go, I can always... It's a username that always works. Because no one else calls me anything as ridiculous.
Yeah, I always recognize you through that when I see, you know, likes or things or posts on Instagram and stuff. Yeah, definitely. Good, old man. That's brilliant. Thanks for that. And everyone go off and buy something to do with Pat Mills or Accident Man, or look out for Space Warp coming soon from Pat and the gang. And I'll say goodbye to you now, and we'll continue chatting after I press stop. Thanks, James.
Cool.
Cheers, man.
Thanks very much, guys.